A reading from Daniel. At break of day, the king got up and hurried to the den of lions. When he came near the den where Daniel was, he cried out anxiously to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you faithfully serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel then said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me, because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done nothing wrong." Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. The king gave a command, and those who accused Daniel were brought and thrown into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. Before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Then King Darius wrote to all peoples and nations of every language throughout the whole world, "May you have abundant prosperity. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people should tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is a living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion has no end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, for he has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. May God bless this reading to our hearing and understanding.
Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me. You have been so, so good to me. Before I took a breath, you breathed your life. You've been so, so kind to me. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Oh, it chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it, I don't deserve it, still you give yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God, your foe, still your love fought for me. You have been so, so good to me. When I felt no worth, you paid it all for me. Yes, you have been so, so kind to me. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Oh, it chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. And I couldn't earn it, and I don't deserve it. still you give yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God, yeah. There's no shadow you won't light up, mountain you won't climb up, coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down, lie you won't tear down, coming after me. There's no shadow you won't light up, mountain you won't climb up, coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down, lie you won't tear down, coming after me.
I'm really glad I'm not singing now. I'm just going to read because that would be really hard to follow. Thank you, EL. That was amazing. So I don't know why I first downloaded Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Probably because, like everyone, I'm always looking for signs of meaning, purpose, and connection to the divine in life. I've talked to enough people to know that there are those quiet moments in life when we are laying in bed and can't fall asleep, or we first wake up in the morning, or we're sitting on the 101 and it is not moving, when we start to think about the things like, is this all there is? Or as all the moments quickly pass me by, am I making the most of those moments? And is what I'm doing with my life making any difference to anyone at all? I know that I am not alone in these thoughts, and like many of you, I think about how my life has turned out a little bit differently than I had hoped. It's not completely different, not entirely different. I count my many blessings all the time, and I have many of them. But I'm now 47, and I realize that there's some goals of my life that have not yet been met. I have some aspirations that haven't materialized, and some dreams which now I'm starting to wonder if they will ever come true. And I wonder if some of them ever will. So as I was looking for a book to read on my Kindle one day, this one popped open, and I thought, well, it might be good for me to spend some time thinking about what is the meaning of life, and who else better to learn it from than a survivor of the Nazi concentration camps. It's a very hard read. Anybody else in the congregation read It's Meaning of Life by Viktor Frankl? Okay, a few of you. Viktor Frankl describes in very graphic detail how brutal life was as a prisoner of the Nazi concentration camp. At 37-year-old, Frankl he's an Austrian of Jewish descent. He was a successful neurologist and psychiatrist, a husband to his wife Tilly, and the director of a program to help high school students who are battling depression. And at this age of 37, he and his wife and his parents were moved to a Jewish ghetto, and it was the beginning of their life under the Nazi regime. Now, I can say with confidence, this is not how Viktor Frankl imagined his life would be. He had worked very hard on his education and his career, only to be forced from his home and to live under the eye of this growing Nazi tyranny. Now, this story is not unlike the one that we heard today of the story of Daniel in the Old Testament from our reading. The Babylonians had come and conquered Jerusalem and Israel. They'd taken the city of Jerusalem. The king of Babylon at this time was King Nebuchadnezzar, and he decided that he wanted some of the young Israelite men to be working for him, under his service, to be his slaves. He would teach them the religion of him. They would eat the traditional food of the Babylonians. They would be taught the literature and the language of the king. Two worlds of difference between Viktor Frankl and Daniel. Two different tyrannical rulers, but two men who had no choice in their future and who were given a life they did not choose. So I think as we face life's challenges, whatever they may be, we can learn about where we can find God and where we can find meaning when life is difficult or disappointing or extremely hard by looking at these two different situations this morning. Whether it's the loss of a loved one, an opportunity that never comes, a cancer diagnosis, how can we find God when life sucks? And full disclaimer, my kids were not allowed to say that word when they were growing up. Silas, you're still not allowed to say it, but I asked Reverend Kathy if I could use the word, and she said yes. And I think, you know, how God shows up when life stinks didn't hold the same weight, so forgive me for that. So Daniel teaches us that first and foremost, no matter what the situation is, we need to stay true to who we are. So when Daniel was brought into enslavement, he was given a daily portion of food and wine to drink from the king. But many of these foods were not permitted under the Jewish law. And Daniel and his friends, if they were to eat this food and drink this wine, basically they would be sinning against God. And so here's what Daniel did. Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the royal rations of food and wine. So he asked the palace master to allow him not to defile himself. Now God allowed Daniel to receive favor and compassion from the palace master. And at the end of the time that the king had set for them to be brought in, the palace master brought them into the presence of King Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them. In every matter of wisdom and understanding concerning which the king had inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all of the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. So no matter what the consequences were going to be for Daniel, no matter what the outcomes, Daniel decided in his heart to stay true to himself and to his beliefs. That could not be taken away from him, although everything else was. Viktor Frankl speaks of this reaction to suffering as well. He writes that when the prisoners of the concentration camp gave up the core of who they were, when they allowed themselves to be influenced and shaped by their harsh surroundings, they would begin this quick downward slide into death. And Frankl said he saw it over and over again. But those who maintained what he calls their human liberty, their internal identity and their centering point, they were able to transcend much of their external surroundings. Here's what he says. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. Every day, every hour, offer the opportunity to make a decision which determined whether you would or would not submit to those powers which threatened to rob you of your very self, your inner freedom, which determined whether or not you would become the plaything of circumstance, renouncing freedom and dignity to become molded into the form of the typical inmate. So when the poo of life hits the fan and nothing seems to be going your way, there's one thing that can never be taken away from you, your human liberty. God's grace, your true spirit. Stay true to who you are, loved as a child of God. Don't give in to a depraved mind or desperate actions to change your circumstances. Stay on the path of love and forgiveness and faith. The things that we've learned by Jesus are the way and the truth and the life. When life sucks, I know I am tempted to give up on all these things. I know the things that are good for me. But when I am suffering in any way, I want to pursue the things that probably aren't very good for me, that only offer temporary satisfaction, and don't provide the real fulfillment I need. Daniel and Frankl are a reminder to me and to us to stay focused on the truths and actions that we know can bring us life. When I'm with a group of friends, and one of us starts complaining about the price of a martini, or that our Apple TV went out when the latest episode of Westworld was on, or that when Hamilton was here, we could not get tickets even though we played the lottery incessantly, one of us will inevitably say, and with a really dry tone, first world problems. First, world problems. It's a simple and easy way to remind each other that most of our problems, in comparison with the rest of the world, aren't problems at all. We are not dealing with civil war, or extreme poverty, or genocide, or malnutrition. We're dealing with irritations and annoyances that, as members of the first world, can really get us down, but are nothing in comparison to what is really going on with the majority of people in the world. But it's easy, isn't it? It's easy to lose perspective and to get caught up with all the little things that weigh us down, to be convinced that we have it hard, and we forget the amazing gifts of life and of love and of friendship. I don't know why this happens, why we so easily lose a sense of truth and understanding of the blessings in our lives and choose to focus on the small irritations of daily life. But once Nebuchadnezzar died, his son Belshazzar became king of Babylon. He continued to keep Daniel and his friends in captivity, and when the words suddenly appeared on a wall and he could not understand, the king sought out Daniel for understanding, and he said to him, "I have heard that you give interpretations and solve problems. Now, if you are able to read the writing and tell me its interpretation, you shall be clothed in purple, have a chain of gold around your neck, and rank third in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered in the presence of the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself, or give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing to the king and let him know the interpretation." So Daniel could have easily complained about his lot in life. He was in captivity, foreign king, foreign government, foreign language. But when the opportunity came for Daniel to be given advancements and rewards, he could have thought, finally, something to relieve me of the pain that I am in. Nothing like a new purple cloak, little gold bling to lift my spirits. But when he was offered, he chose not to take any of it, none of it. Why did he do this? Well, there's not a lot in the text that gives us an insight into Daniel's inner monologue, but if we look at his actions, I think we can infer that Daniel realized how empty those things really are. The fancy food, the clothes, the jewelry. He, I believe, had developed a gratitude for the things that really matter. His love for God, his faith, his friendships, his integrity. I believe Daniel, in his suffering, came to realize that life is about the things that really matter. Viktor Frankl also tells a story to illustrate this point about suffering and how it can lead to a gratitude that probably cannot come any other way. There was a young woman who was in the concentration camp, and she knew, and Frankl knew, that she only had days to live. And she stared out the window during all of her last days, and she told Frankl, "I am thankful that fate has hit me so hard. In my former life, I was spoiled. I did not take spiritual accomplishments seriously." Then she pointed out the window where there was a single branch of a chestnut tree that had two blossoms on the branch. She told Frankl, "This tree is the only friend I have in my loneliness. I often talk to this tree." Frankl wonders if the woman is delirious or having occasional hallucinations, and so he asks her, "Does the tree reply?" And the woman said, "Oh, yes. Yes, it says to me, I am here. I am here. I am life, eternal life." When you are in the middle of it, the sucky part of life, see it as an opportunity to be recalibrated and re-reminded of the things that are beautiful and amazing in this world. They're often not the flashy things. They're not the new iPhone, the front row tickets, the red carpet premiere. It's usually the love of a friend, a tasty meal, a beautiful sunset. Suffering brings us back to a place of gratitude and awareness unlike anything else can. Nietzsche says, "He who has a why to live can bear with almost any how." The final point for today that we can all gain from looking at these two stories is, whether we like it or not, there is something to gain in suffering. There's a well-known speaker and author who talks about developing positive family relationships. One of his pieces of advice that he gives that it stood out to me when I heard it and I remember it to this day, is that he would say, when you go on family vacations, pray for something to go terribly, awfully, humorously wrong. The reason for this, he said, is that when things go wrong, that's when memories are formed. As human beings, we are wired to remember every single thing that goes wrong, rather than the day-to-day events when everything goes to plan and nothing is out of the ordinary. And I know this personally. If you were to ask my family about vacations that we've gone on, here's what you would hear. We were in a beautiful beach house one time in San Diego. Tons of fun, good food, family in the beach. But my daughter, my oldest daughter, Rachel, if she was here, she would say, oh, that was the trip that my dad got super competitive. We were playing a wheelbarrow race, and he stepped on my finger and broke it in an effort to win. Then there was the time that our family went to the Santa Cruz Mountains to go camping. Beautiful redwoods. It's amazing there. Nothing like campfires and long walks in the woods. But if you were to ask my sister-in-law, Carol, all she would remember is that was the time where I led us on a trail. She was pregnant. We got lost, and our trip was supposed to be about 45 minutes, and it was 2 hours. That's what she would remember. And finally, there was another time in San Diego, we rented a beach house, and again, we were just blocks from the beach, we had beach cruisers, we were playing in the water, the weather was amazing, but if you would ask my son Silas about that trip, he would tell you that was the trip that he brought his brand new turtle he got for his birthday, Donnie. His older sister Grace was supposed to be watching the turtle, but she didn't, and now that turtle lives somewhere in San Diego. So suffering, in whatever its form, changes us. It shapes us. It makes us who we are and becomes part of our life story. How do we know the story of Daniel? Because of Daniel's experience in the lion's den. His suffering cemented his place in the history of God and God's interaction with humankind. We learn about God's faithfulness and his compassion and his grace through his suffering. What do we remember about World War II? We remember the brutal German dictator and the concentration camps, and the Holocaust, where millions of lives were taken. And because of that, we have vowed never to allow something so terrifying to happen again, and we have a commitment to act and to stop such a regime from ever being allowed to exist. God shows up in our suffering by taking experiences and events that seem awful at the time and using them to make us and our world a little more compassionate, empathetic, and a little more reflective of God and his kingdom. When I was fired from being the family pastor at my last church, when I came out to them, there was nothing at that time of that suffering that felt good. It felt embarrassing, gut-wrenching, and lonely. And it was one of the hardest experiences I ever went through. But it would take me another hour, at least, to tell you how God has used that experience to allow me to minister and help others who find themselves in similar circumstances. I've probably had at least 24 people, some of who I knew, but the majority of who were strangers, tell me that my story and my experience helped them in their own journey towards truth, acceptance, and love, bringing them back to God. I would have never wished for the pain and suffering I went through, but looking back, I'm so thankful for God, how God has used that experience to shape me and allow me to help others. Brothers and sisters, we will all experience pain, suffering, and times of trial in our life. The story of Daniel and Viktor Frankl's testimony of his time in the concentration camp remind us of these things. Stay true to God, his ways, during your suffering. Allow suffering to remind you of what is really important in life and be filled with gratitude. And finally, allow God to use your suffering to shape you and make you more in line with his image and be his voice of love in the world. I will end with Frankl's words about the role of suffering in life and the prayer the king offered to God when he saw what God had saved Daniel from the lion's den. May these serve as our prayer for God to be with us in our pain. Frankl says, if there is suffering in life at all, then there must be a meaning in suffering. Suffering is an ineradicable part of death. Even as fate and death, without suffering and death, human life cannot be complete. And from Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders. Amen.